This is Gary Lockwood. I played Frank Poole in 2001 A Space Odyssey. And you are listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi.
This is Jerry Donaldson.
And this is Eugenia Stapiro.
And welcome back to another episode of
Women Talk Sci-Fi.
She's in a mood.
Well, I am, because we're going to talk about a woman in sci-fi. So
we are talking about a woman in sci-fi. And we're talking about a show that's just recently come on. And in fact, it is the sixth incarnation, a popular series that's over 50 years old. And that, of course, is Star Trek.
Yes. And so we're talking about Star Trek Discovery.
And even though it's not been on very long and it's new in the world, it's a completely different style of show than we're used to in the Star Trek universe.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I was a bit worried about it when it was being shot, because all this publicity was coming out about how different it was going to be, and people were saying, oh, we're not going to like it because it's not Star Trek.
You know, we didn't know it was not going to be Star Trek.
Yeah. Well, there was presumptions.
You know what some Star Trek fans are, that it's not Patrick Stewart or William Shatner.
But I really like the show.
It's a very dark show.
It is dark.
And it's not the Starfleet that we know.
No, and I don't know whether it's because now I've watched too many reboots of different shows where I've expected it to be the same as the show it's supposed to be and whatever, and so I don't have that high expectation, but no. I really like the storylines in this.
It is, and we have to give credit to a friend of ours who we had dinner with, and we were discussing this with an idea that the possibility of Discovery might be, and that's Scotty Liston from First Contact Conventions, mm-hmm. is that the registry number of the ship is a clue to the direction of where it's actually going to go. So we're not going to tell you what that is. You have to go and work that out yourself.
Yes, but we do have our theories based on that.
We do have our theories on the show. And the whole way the show has presented itself, because it's dark. It's not your standard nice, oh, look at us, Prime Directive 1, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's very much a we have to win.
Yes, it is.
We are war machines.
And we're at war. I mean, DS9 was at war, but there was still a difference to what this one was.
They were at war but they were the mediators within a war zone, because it was against the Cardassians and the Bajorans, as opposed to against the Federation. So this time the Federation Starfleet is in fact at war against the Klingons. We go back that far.
That's true. And we've always
Klingons.
Yeah, but I mean, we've always known that Starfleet has been in, that there was a Klingon war. I mean, the whole original series, all the movies
course.
And everything
and
is based
they hated
on that.
Each other.
Yeah.
And this is pre the original series.
It's supposed
Seems
to be.
Seems weird saying pre the original series. Well, Enterprise
and post
pre.
And post-Enterprise.
And post-Enterprise. Yeah, weird. I mean, here we are. It's like an orange with strings snatched in, and it spins and you don't know where you actually end up.
And I guess this is where your purest Star Trek people find it difficult to like Star Trek Discovery because of its setting. And Enterprise had that sort of flaw too, where it was showing technology that hadn't really been developed or invented.
In the 60s.
Yeah, that hadn't turned, you know, that it was way too complicated and way too advanced for the original series.
Well, Discovery seems to have gone bugger it, we don't care.
Yes.
Because although there are some things that are sort of tip their hat to things, it's still a very fantastic ship.
Mm.
I mean, we hear the noises. They still have the beeps that are on there. We still have the things that we look down. The doors still go...
Yep.
All of those kind of things. So there are those... This is what Star Trek, the original series, sounded like. But it is silly, I suppose, really, 60 years almost after the original series was invented and developed, is to say that we go back and do it exactly that way.
And that's the thing, because we've got, you know, our holographic imagery for when they talk to people like the Admiral and that sort of thing, which, of course, didn't happen in the original series. We've got,
but it did not happen. We didn't ever see it. Doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Oh, but any time that we saw in the original series, they were usually on
screen.
They were on view screens. So, yeah,
but we didn't know there wasn't holographic.
No, we don't.
And I suppose that's what they're doing. Yeah. They're saying you didn't know this happened or not.
But that, to me, I don't care about that. Like, that doesn't worry me.
It's about the story, and it's set in the universe of Star Trek and so on. It, as I said, it's different. It's not the Starfleet that we know.
No, and it's quite a sinister Starfleet, really.
Well, sinister, I don't know. Desperate, I'd come up with. Sinister, because I don't think it's sinister, because if you really want to go to sinister, you go into the alternate universe, sinister, even the original series, when the Mirror Universe kind of thing, they were sinister. These are just hardened soldiers.
I guess you're right, and I think that's where I have to think that they are at war. So they're not the scientific vessels that we're used to seeing, you know, that it was space, the final frontier. We're here to actually look at what's in space and search it. This is, we're trying to keep alive, basically.
Which is, in a way, reflective of our times. I think there, you know, the war on terror and that. Although it's not a war that's, it's ongoing, there are lots of little wars going around the world. And Star Trek has always been reflective of its time. Mm. In the 60s, there was optimism, there was all of those things. There was the civil rights movement, there was changes. There was feminism coming in the women's rights movement and so on, and civil rights and so on. So it reflected its time, you know. It was coming out of World War II, like 20 years after that. Here we are 50 years on, we're in a different world. People are pushing a darker side of history.
Yes.
Currently at the time. And I think Star Trek does reflect societies very well.
But you're right, the Klingons, they've changed their look again. But, you know, after the change of the look from the original series, it doesn't worry me that Klingons look different now.
Well, no, I thought they didn't quite look mammal anymore. They look more, I suppose, reptile. And
they do.
I think they're always meant to be more mammal-oriented as opposed to reptilian in origin and that kind of thing. So that annoyed me because they're just a wee bit, I know they wanted to be different, but to me they were just a wee bit, one step too far.
Well, they're very ornate. I mean, their costumes and everything are amazing, and the makeup is amazing. And they probably reflect more of the alternate universe Klingons from the Star Trek movies.
No Worf in sight, really, is there?
No, not at all.
These are not soft characters.
They're not soft characters. But then Klingons never were meant to be.
No, they're never meant to be. But what I mean is the original series Klingons were very soft. They didn't have any ridges.
That's right.
Enterprise went on to try to explain why there were ridges. Mm-hmm. We had slightly more ridges in The Next Generation. They were similar, maybe a wee bit harsher in some of the characters in DS9.
Yes.
We didn't really see them in Voyager, except for B'Elanna.
She was half human,
so she was soft as well. And Enterprise, I don't think they were in it that much.
Only a couple of times.
And Discovery, obviously, is such a big change.
It is, because it's very Klingon-orientated, even to the fact that every time you see the Klingons, all you're hearing is the Klingon language.
Yes.
And you have to subtitles all the time, you know, which can get a bit annoying, especially if you've got it just on.
No, I mean, I don't mind that because it does actually say these are others. These are not part of the world that I actually live in. So that is interesting. And I think that it is interesting. It still, once again, reflects the xenophobia in Discovery of what the world is going through right now, the othering of people, the difference, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So it's very reflective of its time. It's very dark. Don't know where it's heading.
It's going to be very interesting to see what comes about and how long it stays around, too.
I do like the little bit when they actually go into the original series music in the title. So there are nods to the Star Trek universe, but I suppose these people had to make a new and different show.
And you've got people writing, you've got Kurtzman writing for it, who was so he's part a good friend of JJ's. He was part of
writing. He's around a long, long time in the world of Star Trek.
Well, he wrote the Star Trek 2009 movie. He's written for Lost. He's written for Once Upon a Time. So he's got quite an extensive background in writing and is well known within that sort of group. I mean, the interesting thing is, too, that this is the first time you're not seeing it through the eyes of the captain as the main character as well.
I don't know, Eugenia. I look at it and I see him in it as much as her. And I do see it through his eyes more than hers. I don't think they've lived up to the promise it's not the captain. I think the captain is very much in charge and very much the lead in the show. We just see the first officer more.
True, but I guess there is more storyline towards her as opposed to...
What? They've given her a boyfriend? I mean, do you know what I mean? If you take out the boyfriend bit, they probably both have an equal storyline. Do you know what I mean? And that's it. Other than the fact in the first few episodes that I've seen where she was the character who... I didn't quite understand why she had to commit mutiny in the beginning, but there we go. You know, that kind of stuff.
I don't think I still understand that one, but anyway.
And I know she kept saying that the Klingons are bad, blah, blah, we shouldn't talk to them. And so she started the current round of bad stuff. I mean, that, to me, they still haven't explored her humanity that much. I mean, her human side that has been formed by Klingons. Because all of a sudden now she's got lots of emotions.
Mm. And you mean human side formed by Vulcans?
Yes, her human side formed when she was with Vulcans that she had to suppress. It's disappeared.
It that has. That's true, yes.
She's very much human now, all of those things.
And that took a very short amount of time
amount of time. So where he, the captain, is still the much more intriguing character. Where did he come from? Where is his ethos? Where did he get it? Why is he such determined to win this war? What has happened to him? We know what's happened to her, but we don't know what's happened to
him. No, that's true. And, you know, like his room where he's got everything dissected under the planet.
Why does he stand up?
He does mention that.
I obviously missed the sentence. He stands up. I know he's in the dark because his light is sensitive. His eyes are sensitive to light. I love the way he has fortune cookies on his counter.
Comes from his ancestry.
One episode, I wanted to know if there was a tribble. A tribble on his desk.
There's always a tribble on his desk.
But we never hear the tribble.
Yes, we do.
Do we?
Yep.
He never touches the tribble.
No, he never touches the tribble. But when you first, I've probably first noticed the sound of the tribble in the very first episodes that you meet him. You can hear the tribble in the background.
So why don't you just send the whole pile of tribbles off to the Klingons? Feed them up.
Oh, exactly.
Send them off. But we haven't got to the original series yet.
No, we don't know that
they're really, 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 really bad and we should feed them lots of grain. But
well, we also don't know that the Klingons don't like tribbles because maybe they haven't met. And maybe
the there's captain, a future in
the captain actually the introduces the tribbles to the
so
Klingons.
Who knows why? So it'll be. But the thing is, the problem is, Eugenia, is that tribble is on that desk and the bowl of fortune cookies is just there. Why hasn't the tribble gone over and eaten all the fortune cookies?
And also multiplied.
And multiplied 100 million times. I mean, that's just. It's just like, don't put them in water after midnight kind of thing.
Well, they might have de-sect the tribble, but they didn't know about that because McCoy didn't know what had happened to the tribbles.
That's absolutely right. So that is an intriguing little piece of complete, total, trashy trivia that we never may ever get resolved. But I do
enjoy
it.
And why is there a ball?
Actually, I have to say my husband enjoys this Star Trek probably more than some of the other ones.
Oh, really?
He actually seeks it. Oh, there's a new Star Trek. Shall we go and watch it? He knows I enjoy it, so he'd sit and watch it with me. But the fact that, I have to wait until the end of the what happened before so I can go quickly to the come back to sit down and watch it so I don't miss out on anything is more reflective. So maybe this appeals to a different type of person, this particular
discovery. I usually judge a show if I like it, if I'm willing to go back and watch it again. And
well, I don't know if it's been on long enough for me to do that.
Well, because I've seen the first couple of episodes with a few different people, because I've introduced them to Discovery, I had a friend who came over and I had to watch like 8 episodes in a row because she hadn't seen it yet. This is Cherie. So she's right. Sitting in my lounge room while I'm doing other stuff and she's watching 8 episodes of Discovery. And I didn't mind sitting and watching it again. So to me, that always indicates, you know, this show's not too bad. Whereas Enterprise, as much as I like it now, it's not the first show that I'll go back and watch.
And I wonder what this Discovery is actually doing to the canon.
Oh, forget the canon.
Because we know people who were really annoyed when the new movies came out.
Yes.
That they didn't fit in with the canon, that they actually broke. Regardless of the fact that you say it's an alternate universe, blah, 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 blah. They just couldn't watch it and they couldn't go back and do that again. I don't know. Is this going to get any new group of fans to actually watch Star Trek? Are old fans going to like it? I mean, we do, but I don't know.
I don't know. Not everyone.
Not everybody liked DS9.
No, not everyone, and not everyone likes every single Star Trek thing that comes in. And you know, I like all of them, but there are some I like more than others. And
is this a 3-year, or 5-year, or a 7-year series?
Yeah, or a 2-year, or a whatever. You know, who knows? It's going to be interesting to see. And television has changed.
It has.
Even the way money's put into TV and shows that continue don't necessarily continue because of popularity. And
no.
Some are stopped regardless of popularity. So
it's all
you
about
don't know.
Money.
It is all about money.
And I suppose these days, because a lot of them are streamed, a lot of people know more directly how many people have actually watched something. So therefore, you may have a sleeper show that everybody thinks is boring, but millions of people are watching it, where you may have a what everybody thinks is supposedly wonderful. Nobody watches it and yes. it still gets going. So who knows where we will end up with Discovery, and it will be intriguing to follow it and go through with it and see where the dark, very, very flawed, very, very flawed characters. Not one of them is the sweet Counselor Troy.
No. Well, Tilly is close.
Tilly,
she's naive.
She's naive. She's a Wesley. She's Wesley. Come on.
Oh, I see her more as a Harry Kim.
No, Harry's a slightly more sophisticated, I think, in her. Although, I have to say that in the last episode that I watched, I was quite impressed with her completely different persona. I don't know. Well, maybe she's a cross between Wesley and Harry Kim. Let's put it that, because she's a cadet, so she's young.
Yes, she's young.
And he's a lieutenant, so therefore he was already there, and we know that Harry actually had worked in Starfleet engineering on the planet. We don't know anything about it. The fact that she's still a cadet, and that's different. We didn't have cadets outside of the academy in the later. This is the first time I've really seen a cadet as a permanent ongoing member of a crew.
True, but we don't know how many cadets. Yeoman Ran, I don't know whether.
She's a yeoman.
So
that's already a rank. And a yeoman is a rank that is done by enlisted personnel.
Yep.
So a cadet usually is a rank that is of officer, which appears to be what we only see in Star Trek. We only see officer ranks. We don't actually see enlisted ranks, except in Enterprise, where we actually have Marines. So what have we got for this episode? Who have we got that we're interviewing?
Well, we've actually got an interview from the archives, because the person we interviewed did appear in Star Trek Discovery.
Which is why we're using the interview.
But wasn't part of Star Trek Discovery when we interviewed her.
No, but she was actually in a starship at one stage.
Oh, she's been in many starships.
She's been in the 100. She's been in Battlestar Galactica.
She's been in Smallville.
She's been in heaps of shows along the way, but because she's recently most starred in, and we wanted to talk about Star Trek Discovery,
yep.
we thought we'd use her up.
So we're talking about Rika Sharma, and you will know her probably if you've watched Battlestar Galactica. That's where you'll know her from the most, and she's such a lovely person.
She is. I happened to have an incident, which was no fault of mine. I got run over basically by a volunteer in front of her at a convention, and she was the one that administered first aid.
Yes.
And so on. So she was absolutely lovely.
And her mother.
And her mother was there too. But Rika was the one who basically did all the comforting, the touching, the fixing and so on. So she is a lovely, lovely person. And we had a lovely interview with her. She's in Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. She's been in Arrow. She's been in, as Eugenie's already mentioned,
V.
Battlestar Galactica. She's already been in heaps. Sanctuary, she's been in Space Buddies. She's been around in genre television for a very long time.
Well, not that she's that old.
No, she's not that old, but she's been around in her short time.
Yes.
She's been around a while, and she's done lots of things, from the Lone Gunman to Dark Angel to many shows. So you would recognize her very much in anything that you would watch from the sci-fi perspective.
And in Star Trek Discovery, she played Commander Landry.
And she was the security officer. Unfortunately, she got killed.
Yeah, she did. She didn't last very long, which was a shame, because her character was, again, she wasn't a very nice person. Well, she was horrible to Michael.
She was very much of the story of Discovery, wasn't she? Mm. I mean, in terms of it's darker, it's we have to win against all odds. It's not the Prime Directive kind of Starfleet yet?
There is a little bit of Prime Directive. They did mention it.
Not a lot.
They mentioned it in the first episode.
In passing. Oh, this is something we have to hold up. Oh, where are we going to hold it? Oh, way over there. Just way over there.
Well, not that they've come across other planets that they've interfered with their lifestyle.
Poor creature in the drive.
Oh, that's true. Oh, that was horrible.
It was when we found out what it was. And she was, you know, Sharma's character was very much involved with keeping that and torturing that poor creature that no one knew was sentient.
Mm.
So it is a much darker story. It is a much darker, I don't know where it's going. It's quite intriguing. It's not the normal formula for Star Trek.
It's not. And I think that's why I'm intrigued, because I want to keep watching to find out what actually is behind all this.
The truth is out there?
Yeah. Isn't that another show?
Isn't that another show? Yes.
So let's listen to our interview with Rika.
Thank you.
Now, is acting something that you've always wanted to do?
Yeah.
Although you came to it quite late, didn't you, compared to...
Well, yes and no. I came to it a bit later career-wise in comparison to when I fell in love with it, for sure. My first love, by about grade four, I thought that I wanted to be a painter. I used to draw a lot and loved imagery, and so I spent a lot of time drawing, and I thought that's what I would be, an artist when I grew up. And then in grade five, we had an audition for a school play, and then I discovered my love for acting. So from that day forward, it was always a question of which way I would go. And when I finished high school, I went to art school. I thought I would go that way. And quickly discovered that it was more challenging than I thought it would be, that the art world was, I don't know, it was totally over my head, a lot of it. And I actually was blocked. I was a blocked artist straight out of high school.
Couldn't draw a leaf or anything, huh?
I don't know. It was awful. It was a really hard year, my first year at art school.
Is that because you wasn't sure of what sort of way your imagery would go, whether it be abstract or impressionist, or...
Were you just overwhelmed?
I think I was overwhelmed. Most of the people that attended Emily Carr were in their 30s. So there was a great maturity in the thinking and the conversations that would happen in classrooms, and it just was like totally over my head. And I didn't know...
So you were 17, 18 at the time.
Yeah, yeah. And I wasn't that mature.
A young 17 or 18.
Yeah, yeah, mentally. I hadn't really developed myself in these kind of... You know, that particular school was quite forward-thinking. It wasn't just about, you know, technique. It wasn't at all about that, actually. It was much more conceptual. And that's where I was really lost. So so then after that, took me a while, but then I came back to acting. And
Did growing up in Vancouver have a bit of an influence as well, seeing that Vancouver's quite a hub of acting? Did you know that that was happening around you?
A little bit. One girl in our high school, Stacey Grant, she had an agent early on and had a career, and I remember seeing her years later after high school at an audition. She was like, oh, you're here, you're acting. And I was like, yeah, you were doing it the whole time we were in high school, but I was clueless. So yeah, I think it was in there, but I didn't know how to get connected.
So you picked the two hardest professions, basically, to try to make a living in.
Yeah.
Acting and art.
Yeah. And then later on, I decided as a hobby I would... try and study Indian classical music.
Oh.
With no musical background whatsoever. So apparently I have a knack for picking really difficult things, including men.
Well, we know they're all difficult. All of them, all the time.
So is that why you probably get challenged by having meatier roles? Because you've had some really incredible roles, especially the one in Battlestar.
Thank you.
That had quite a dynamic arc in its story.
Yeah.
And you would have had to act out of that different ways all the way through.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the more meaty and the more difficult and challenging something is, I mean, to a point, the more excited I get. I think I get more interested and, you know, the challenge of... when things are rich, I get excited.
And Battlestar was certainly very rich.
Very rich. It was such a rich world. I feel really lucky that I was part of it.
Did you realise when you started that that's sort of the world it was going to be? Or was it just a script that landed on your doorstep and away you went?
Yeah, I was clueless. I liked the character and I liked what was on the page. And I had a really good feeling about it, and you know, I did my best, as I always do, and well, usually do. Let's be honest. But it was when I was in the audition room. Actually, I had auditioned for a couple of different roles before that on Battlestar, and it was what happened in the room that really got me excited. That's when I got a clue that it might be really rich material, because the way that the directors were speaking to me and what they liked really kind of shocked me, honestly. I remember going home and saying to my friend, we knew that our mutual friend Grace was in the show. And I said, I think Grace landed a really good one. I think this might actually be good television. I'm not holding my breath, but I think there might be something really good going on here. I don't think
not this quite is reality show material, but yes.
Yeah, yeah. So, and yeah, and then when I got to set and was doing my first scene with Mary McDonnell, and then, you know, looked her up halfway through the day going, there's something about this woman that makes me think that she's done
something before.
And actually it was one of my good friends who was like, you're working with who? Dances with Wolves, does that mean anything to you? I was like, sort of. Yeah.
But then Battlestar wasn't your first sort of introduction to the sci-fi world as well, was it?
No. When I was little, I would watch Star Trek reruns after school.
Oh, really? So you're a Trekkie at heart, are you?
Before we get on that, you said that you're already going for three roles. This is your third time at Battlestar.
Yeah, yeah.
How is that as an actress to go for the same show all the time? And do you know what I mean in terms of you go, right. you're rejected, you go,
well,
go, you're rejected, and then you go again. Is it just each role that you focus on as opposed to the whole?
Yeah, you focus on the role for sure. I mean, but the more that you go in for that particular series, you certainly get a better idea of what the show is about, because you get a chance to read more snippets of scripts and sort of piece things together. So yeah, I think every time, I think so. Yeah, I think so. You get a feel for what's going on in the room, and also they get a feel for you. I mean, that's what happened. They, you know, they knew that they liked me when they met me, but they were like, Viper pilot, not so much. And then they, you know, then I brought me in for something else, and they were like, it was a commander or something. They were like, commander, no, that wasn't quite right. And so then they brought me in for Tori, and they were like, yeah, you know, they were. I think it works on both sides. You're trying to figure out what the right match is. And
did you know you were going to be a Cylon?
No.
No?
No.
So that
nobody knew. No one knew.
So it was a bit of a shock?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It was a fantastic shock.
Yeah. Because you got to be the real baddie.
Well, that I didn't know. We really learned about who our characters were sort of as it went along, especially once the Cylon thing happened, because then it was, you know, wide open. Anything that we had established about who we thought we were was out the window.
And gone.
Yeah. So, luckily I did have some creative input into it, but...
But now you've moved on to another show that's actually current and is quite popular on television, is The 100.
Yes.
And you're just coming into a new season and a new role in that. Can you say anything about that?
Well, I finished it, but what can I say about it? I can say that it's a great group of people over there. I get into trouble once again. it was a real pleasure working with Raymond J. Barry. And, I don't know what else to say.
Well, I have to ask you about Johnny Depp and tampons.
Oh.
Last question, Johnny Depp and tampons. You have to tell the story.
Okay, so this is my first ever experience on a set. 21 Jump Street came to my high school, and they asked all the kids in the drama department if they would be extras. So we all got together in the cafeteria, and we were all extras for the day. There was an actress on the set that they needed a stand-in for, and she was a colored woman. And I grew up in North Vancouver, which is very white. And they came into the cafeteria, and the guy looked around and said, I need a stand-in. Looked at me, looked at my friend Sula, who's 6 foot black woman. And he said, seriously, that's my two choices? I'll take the shorter one. And so I went into the office and the principal's office, and I, you know, was really pleased as punch, and because they were smoking, and so I bummed a cigarette. Don't tell my mom.
No. Do you want us to cut that bit out?
No, doesn't matter. And so I was smoking in the principal's desk, and
uh-huh.
and
Rebel.
And I, at this point, I thought Johnny Depp was a loser because I was way too cool for 21 Jump Street, and I didn't think he was a real actor. And he was sitting in the nurse's room, and he looked so bored, absolutely bored, out of his mind. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. And he grabbed the tampon box that was in the nurse's room, because, you know,
it's a nurse's room in a girl's in high school.
Yeah, exactly. And he started throwing them at me. And in that moment, I actually started to respect him a little. I thought, he doesn't think he's all that. He doesn't think this show is all that. He's bored out of his mind. Maybe he is a good actor.
So tampons changed your mind on Johnny Depp.
Totally. Now I think his work is fantastic.
Okay.
We're
getting the bums rush.
Okay. Thanks for your patience, everyone.
Thank you very much, Frank.
Hi, this is Stefan Kapasek. I played Colossus in Deadpool. And you are listening to Woman Talk Sci-Fi.
People find that fascinating, even though it's slightly about other shows that she was in, including Battlestar and her own personal self. So as people, I'm sure they're aware when they listen to us, we don't always talk to the people that we interview about this stuff that we're talking about, because it's all about getting to know the person as opposed to keep talking about the show with them.
That's true.
Because we can talk our hind legs off donkeys about them.
Well, as you've heard, because we've been talking for quite a while about the show.
That's absolutely right. So I would be really interested to see where the show's gone in 2 years if it's still on television. Let's hope it is.
I hope it is, because hopefully, and for us in Australia, it's on Netflix. So it might actually be something that a whole new generation of people will tap into.
Well, I think it goes with younger people's ideas now, as opposed to that, you know, the optimistic 1960s television show, which was all about world change.
Mm. And at this present moment for Netflix in Australia, all the Star Trek franchise is on Netflix. So
hey,
people who are watching Discovery can easily binge watch Next Gen and Deep Space Nine and Voyager and even the original series and the movies. So
and the cartoons.
And the cartoons as well, which are very well written.
Yes.
So it's there.
Were they written by James Blish, some of them?
Oh, DC Fontana. There's a whole lot of people. The,
I mean, they were actually real science fiction book writers.
Yeah, they were, more so than comic book people.
We're not saying comic book people.
They were written from established
authors, and a lot of them.
They were written a different way to most cartoons of that era.
Yes. They were children's cartoons, really.
Not really. They were really Star Trek episodes that couldn't happen because they didn't have the budget to do it. And suddenly they could be in all these worlds and they could have all these characters. And they were lucky, apart from Walter Koenig, who wasn't put on it, could have all the original voices as well.
We could wax lyrical about Star Trek for like...
As you have heard.
As you have heard. And we can talk about every different season and every different show. And we could probably name half the episodes because it's one of our favourites.
Mm.
But we won't drag it on.
No.
Because we have to stop sometime.
But we do have to thank Rob and Sandy for the ability to interview Rika from cultureshockevents.com.
Yes, they allowed us the opportunity to interview Rika, so that was really...
So it's good night from me.
And good night from her.
Okay, goodbye.
See ya.
Bye, bye.